It seems like nobody really knows how to kind of get a handle on what's right, what's wrong, what's in between, and if any of this is really doing damage in the lives of people. And we're going to talk about that today because it's important. Millions upon millions of people, mostly women, have read this book, have gone to this movie, and we already did a show on the 50 Shades of Grey. We talked to two very incredible women who were able to help us kind of wade through some of the psychological waters as to what this is doing to our lives, to our marriages. But today we're going to talk a little bit more personally with a couple people that are going to be able to give us some personal insight about how their lives have been affected by things like pornography, promiscuity. You know, listen, this is not just a man's issue. It very much is a woman's issue as well. We're going to get the female perspective on it. You are going to want to stay tuned. This is going to be a good one. Have got some work to do today on a very serious topic, serious business, because there are a whole lot of people, specifically women, men and women, but today we're really kind of zeroing in on how pornography, how promiscuity, how just that whole salacious appetite that our culture has, really how it is doing a number on lots of women, teens, young adults, young 20s, all the way up through all decades of life are really being affected. And we just kind of need to talk about it, get it out in the open, and then try to find out how we can get some help for folks who really do need it. And so we're going to talk to a couple people that I think you're going to find very interesting. One of them is Mo Isom. She's just an interesting girl all the way around, and she really does have a testimony to share with you. And so if you'll please help me to welcome Mo to the show today, I'd really appreciate it.
Hello.
I'm glad you're here.
I'm happy to be here.
Yes.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, listen, just get comfy. You know, we just get comfy around here and just kind of hang out and talk. Because we need to talk. So a lot of people are familiar with you because you wrote this little blog. Well, first of all, you're a great writer, period. You have lots of great writing on your blog. You need to go and just look Mo Isom up, I-S-O-M, because you've got a great blog. There's one that really captured the attention of a lot of people called The 50 Shades of Grace.
Yes.
Why did you, just start right there with why did you call it 50 Shades of Grace?
Okay, so I wrote this blog at the time where 50 Shades of Grey, the movie, was coming out. And I could not go on Facebook or go online or go on social media without seeing some type of article written with an opinion about 50 Shades of Grey, you know, supportive, don't understand what the big hullabaloo is, Christian perspective on it that's offended, that wasn't pleased. You know, you just saw the whole gambit of opinions. And I sat there kind of scrolling through these articles and realizing, you know, I could sit down and I could write a blog post, analyzing and critiquing the motives of writing something like this, the issues with our culture, being so fascinated by it. Or I could kind of strike to the heart of the message and dig below all of this and share the 50 shades of grace that I've seen through promiscuity, through issues with just sexual stigma, through pornography, through all of these different things, and just sort of share a more personal take on it. Because the conversation was loud enough about the actual book.
Yeah.
I wanted the conversation to be about Jesus, because ultimately that's where any growth or insight or perspective was going to come from, and the response was just amazing. People really, really responded and connected, I think, first with the vulnerability, and then second with the relatability.
Yeah.
There were so many messages I got from people saying, I cannot believe you just wrote about that. I would have never had the guts to, but I wrestled with X, Y, and Z, you know, and how did you process? What did you do? Are you still all these?
Yeah.
And the majority were, I mean, all of them reaching out to me were women.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait.
I'm just going to talk and you're not going to ask any questions.
I know, and I like to ask questions.
Ask the questions.
This is my show.
I'm
so
sorry.
Just hold on.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Listen, we got to back up a little bit because I got to ask you a question with all your comments that you were getting back when you wrote the blog, and we're going to talk about the blog because folks need to know exactly what the blog was about, 50 Shades of Grace. But I want to know, in your kind of sphere of influence, did you have friends, coworkers, people that were reading the book, going to see the movie, Or were they mostly kind of steering clear of it? What kind of circle of friends were you in?
Yeah, so the circle of friends that I was in was really steering clear of it, and pretty opinionated on the material, on the response, really sort of frustrated culturally with the popularity of it all. That was my inner circle. But at the same time, I realized I couldn't just be blinded by the like-minded view of my inner circle. There were plenty of colleagues, of friends, of peers my age who were reading it, who did go see it, who were tweeting them sitting in the theater, you know, who some outspoken, some who I know had read it, but would probably never want anybody to know they read it.
Okay, I really want to know in the group that we have here. I'm not going to ask you if you saw it. I'm not going to do it. But I do want to know if you had people that you know, close friends of yours that went to go see the movie. Anybody? Okay, so the majority of our hands are raised. Lots of our hands are raised. How about read the book? Do you have people in your life that read even more hands now reading the book? Okay, so the last statistic I read, and this has been a while ago, there were about 50 million people that had read this book. One of the highest selling books of all time is 50 Shades of Grey, and it's very clearly about sex and a specific form of sex and how it all plays out. And I gotta tell you, the very first time I heard about this book at all, I was at church, and there was a young lady who has been in our, I say young lady, but you know, she's in her 40s, which is young.
Is it?
It is young. She just said, is it? Yes, ma'am, it is young.
Okay.
And she's been married for a while. And I heard about it because we were just kind of casually talking, me and a few friends, and she said, you know, y'all, I got this book called 50 Shades of Grey. At the time, I hadn't really heard anything about it. This was maybe four years ago. And she just said, I got this book, and it has really been great for my marriage. So the first information I heard about it was how great it was, that it kind of lit a new fire and a new spark in her relationship. So I just heard it was great. That's all I heard. Then sort of down the pipeline, I began to hear that, and of course I didn't have a copy of the book, you know, I just, you know, didn't have it yet, but I began to hear comments about how it seems good at first, but then it sort of leads you down a path that you might find yourself sort of entangled in something that is not where you want to be.
Right.
Is that what you were beginning to hear as well?
Yeah, it was really interesting because there was one camp of peers who were reading it who thought, oh, this is good. You know, this has given us ideas. This is, you know, it's saucy, it's spicy, it's, you know, it makes me blush more than anything I've seen on TV, just reading a book, you know, sort of this really caught up in the, erotic, you know, turned on, it's a good
read. It's erotica.
Yeah.
It is.
And then
yeah.
there was another camp of people who I think, who I knew had been reading the book, who, I think started to realize through it, wait a second, this is not what love is. And they're really selling this is love. And it's kind of disturbing and it's kind of upsetting me, you know, and really sort of started to lean towards the camp of this is sending real mixed signals from what I know to be true, but it's still so popular. And it just kind of got confusing. All the waters got really muddy.
Yep. Okay, so then you respond with 50 Shades of Grace. Just tell us, to just fill everybody in, what is your blog post 50 Shades of Grace about?
Yes. So that blog post is written more poetically than long-form writing. And throughout it, 50 times I say, I'm thankful for 50 Shades of Grace. But, you know, before each of those, there's a little segment of story.
About your life.
About my life. And it starts right off the bat saying, you know, along the lines of, I remember when I was young and I opened the truck door and a playing card fell out from stuff stuck behind the seat. And
that would have been like what your dad would have put in the car.
Yeah,
and stuck
my dad's truck. He just, you know, wedged folders and bags and papers back there. It was a small truck. And I remember a playing card falling out. And still to this day, vividly remember bending over and picking it up just to, you know, wedge it back in there, but flipping it over. And there was pornographic images on it. I mean, I saw a man and a woman doing things I'd never seen.
How old were you?
Seven.
Okay.
Yeah, seven, maybe eight. And it's that, it was that feeling of your stomach, like coming up into
like,
your chest and you
this?
Feel like, what is it? And you don't even know what it is yet, but you know it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know it's just, you shouldn't be seeing it. And you know, my dad's coming around the side of the truck, and so I'm wedging it back as fast as I can. And the blog says it more poetically, but it sort of starts there, and it says, you know, even in that moment, I'm thankful for 50 shades of grace. And it moves through seeing as a child my dad really struggling with a pornography addiction.
Yeah, in one instance, you talk about sort of walking around the corner and seeing images on a computer screen or on a television screen that he was watching.
Yeah, coming downstairs just to get a drink late at night. I can remember turning the corner, and our TV was in such a place that you could see it if you came into the kitchen, and there was porn, and, you know, always coming down into the office, and it'd be a quick turn off of the computer screen, and, you know, oddly enough, immediate anger and frustration with me. Which I love my dad.
He would be frustrated with you?
Yeah, I love my dad through and through. And at no point, in any point of the blog, did I want it to seem like I was blaming my issues on some, on my dad.
But it had something to do with it.
There was exposure. Yeah. There was exposure at an extremely young age. And I watched it take a toll on my parents' marriage and keep him out of my mom's arms at night. And I watch, you know, it just, the blog moves through this pornography presence when I'm so young, to actual interest on my part then. I've been exposed to it, and I'm human.
What would you say was, from the time you were seven and this started and you felt uncomfortable, at what point do you think it moved into an interest where it began to kind of stir in you a curiosity that led toward desire?
Quickly. It's amazing how quickly those things can really captivate our mind and our heart. And, you know, when kids are young, and it's scary because the exposure is happening younger and younger, it seems, every year. But then you have friends who have seen or heard something that are telling you things. And my neighbor who knew this channel on the TV, and even though it was fuzzy, you could see some stuff. And so we'd go, like, try to figure out what we were seeing. And
back in the days when TVs were fuzzy.
Were fuzzy, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And we're, like, trying to discern. And, you know, you find the channels on your own TV, and you're kind of like turning down the volume, but trying to figure all this out.
Did your parents know at all that you were struggling with this?
Oh, no. I can maybe think of one time my dad walked in, and I had, like, was maybe trying to see something on the computer, and I clicked away, and he's like, what are you looking at? You know, but didn't really pry. I don't think it raised too much of a red flag. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was growing up at the time that internet was really growing, and pornography hit the internet quickly. It did not waste time. And so just a lot of exposure. And,
you know, I got to say, before we go to a quick break, I've got to say that even what I'm gathering from you now is really a trick, I think, of the enemy that we don't quite get clearly, and that is that exposure doesn't leave you satisfied. It actually leaves you hungering for the next level.
Right.
So you're constantly wanting the next thing to satisfy. What used to satisfy, it doesn't anymore. Now you've been exposed, you want more.
Right.
So with 50 Shades of Grey or things like that, you feel like, oh, this is cool. We're gonna do this. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden you find it actually didn't satisfy you. It just kind of made you curious about what we could do next and what we can do next. So then it continues to lead you down a path that we're going to keep talking about with Mo in just a few minutes. So please stay tuned.
This is going to be an incredible experience where we all get to see what it's like to experience God's unfailing love. We are incredibly loved, incredibly valuable, and incredibly capable of blowing it. That's why we are in the book of Hosea. I want you to experience it. I want you to be able to enjoy it. I want you to be able to taste and see that the Lord is good. If you're lost, the message of Hosea is that God will find you. If you're ashamed, He'll cover you. If you've wandered off, He'll come get you. If you have given up on Him, He is not going to give up on you. If you have found yourself in chains and in slavery and you don't know how you got there, He will buy you back and give you freedom. That's the incredible scandal of God's love. He would do whatever it takes to restore us. That kind of unfailing love will change everything.
We've been talking to Mo. Mo has been kind of leading us on a very vulnerable, authentic journey through some of the struggles in her life, but I'm so glad she is because it really is helping us today. And it's already been helping a lot of people. She has a fantastic blog where she has written some eye-opening things about her own life that also lead us to broader issues of culture and just the heart of women and how we can remain pure and make sure that we're, you know, living in a way that's healthy all the way around. So I'm glad you've tuned back in because we were just about to really talk about the path that sort of you just begin to walk down, seeing the pornography that your father was looking at, being exposed to it, then that exposure leading to a little bit of desire, and then just being fed all along the way. Where did this eventually lead you?
Yeah, so where, I mean, all of this exposure eventually led was first and foremost to a really twisted view of beauty and power, because a lot of the interest, while the sexual images were interesting, to me it was this allure of this woman who really was like in control, and she was sexy and she was beautiful, and you know, you're seeing versions of it on the movies, even if it's not as graphic, and this is what culture finds beautiful.
So you're getting kind of excited about the fact that my femininity's got some power, and I can use this to my advantage.
Yes, and I'm kind of rationalizing what I'm looking at as I'm learning. I'm learning tips here. This is how one day, you know, I'll be able to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I'd made a commitment to my mom when I was young that I would save myself until I was married. But actually found myself very much in gray area because I had sort of committed to virginity, but never really learned about purity.
Yeah.
And so it was this commitment to virginity and, okay, I'll never go all the way, but confused about purity, seeing the power and control of these women, thinking that is really what a man desires. So when I become of age and am actually sort of finding the courage to do these things physically as well, I was completely lost in the gray area of I can round the bases but not go all the way. I can give little pieces of myself away but still be a virgin, and that's, you know, ideally what a good Christian would be, right? A virgin. Yet I am doing everything but a thread of holding on to what is pure. And so I really found as I was growing as a young woman, I was just reckless. I was just reckless. And, you know, a big piece of my story is we eventually lost my father to suicide. And that left me overwhelmed.
How old were you?
I was 18.
You were 18.
I was 18.
Did he leave a note or anything that let you know why he did leave? Okay.
He left a note explaining how this decision would benefit our family on the financial side, on just him being out of the picture side, all of these things. Mm-hmm. He never really gave deep explanation as to why, but and we were blindsided because my dad was a family man through and through.
Really?
I mean, I just think of there were some financial things that came to the surface, and I think he really just panicked, and I think it broke his heart that he had really hurt his family. And we were blindsided. It came out of nowhere. But we can look back now and see he was clearly dealing with some, you know, dysthymic depression. And I really believe that the pornography addiction played a great role in that. He was bound by a lot of bondage that kept him away from my mother, that kept him fixated on something that was broken and impure.
A fantasy.
Exactly. And, you know, we could have a whole nother session about all the details around that, but it was, you know, after his passing, I ran from God into depression and anxiety and working as hard as I possibly could to use sin-sized pieces to fill a God-sized hole in my heart. I mean, just indulged physically with guys. I was just like a machine, like, get in, give me my fix, get out.
You know what? You have to stop for just a second. That is like a tweetable phrase right
there.
Isn't
that good?
That was good.
I tweeted it once. I've been waiting for like
an opportunity
thousands of likes. Yeah, I've been waiting for a time to use that.
Pieces to fill a God-sized hole. And it just doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
And we think it will, and we keep piling them on top of each other, and that's what you were doing.
Yeah.
And then did you find yourself completely addicted to this lifestyle and to pornography or promiscuity?
I found myself completely exhausted.
Yeah.
I was just tired, you know, and still trying to hold on to this thread of I'm a virgin. I'm building a reputation. I'm building a list of individuals that could put up a very different argument for my virginity and purity, you know. And I honestly was just losing myself, and I was exhausted, and I was... It's the temporary pleasure. It's the quick fix.
Yeah.
And you know, it helps somewhat numb, somewhat aching heart, but eventually it leaves you void.
Okay. At what point did you wake up and go, wait a minute, this is not healthy. This is not okay. And how did you work your way out of it? Because it's one thing to realize it. It's another to try to figure out, how am I going to stop?
Right. So I... another big piece of my testimony was about a year after my dad's loss and really the depth of my struggles. I was just, the cry of my heart was, God, if you're so real, just wreck my life because I'm exhausted and I'm tired. And he literally did so. I was in a horrific car accident. And hanging upside down in a ravine at 1:30 in the morning, I had never felt more overwhelmed by the presence of a God who said, I will wreck your life for my glory. And he just, he shifted my heart. It was hard to explain. Life couldn't tangibly look the same after encountering the presence of the Holy Spirit.
That's good.
And I started to, you know, you step back into your normal life thinking, I have come to know the Lord. You know, life will be different. But then you step back into the rhythm of your sin because you think, I'll just go about my normal life.
I was just about to ask that because you still had to make choices
day
in and day out to walk in this brand new freedom that you've been given.
Right.
What did it look like to be free, not just to have experience and encounter with God, but to not go back on Tuesday and do the same thing I was already doing?
Right. So I stepped back into it and I very much tried. And the true conviction was overwhelming. Particularly with the pornography. You know, I hadn't made the connection yet that that was a spiritual rooted issue. And so the first time that I went back to that after coming to know Christ, there was immediate conviction and almost just my prayer really became, God, give me eyes to see your people as you see them. Give me heart to break for what breaks yours and just bind my heart to thee. And I would just repeat that. Give me a heart to break for what breaks yours and bind my heart to thee. And I couldn't look at those images without physically feeling ill.
Yeah.
That is God's child. It's not just someone's daughter. It's not just someone's mother. It's not any of those things. It's someone. It's one of God's creations. And I can't possibly view these things and find any of the same interest or stimulation when my heart is literally breaking for the individual on
the
screen.
See, this is really powerful what you're saying, Mo, because what you're telling somebody is that God can literally make you not want to look at it anymore.
Yes.
And I bet there would have been a time in your life, there's been a time in all of our lives, it might not be this exact same issue, but there's been something we have wanted so much that we never thought in a million years we'd ever not want it anymore.
Right.
But the fact that you were willing, it takes a lot of courage to me to be able to say, okay, I'm going to actually pray that God will help me not want something that I actually really want, you know.
Yeah.
To pray that prayer takes courage. But once you start praying it, you can believe that God is powerful enough. In fact, I think one of the biggest miracles often that he does is not in our circumstances. It's the miracles that he does in our own heart, in making our attitudes change, our desires change, to where you're saying you're looking at these images you would have looked at the day before, the week before, the month before, and all of a sudden there's this distaste that wells up in you. And I'm sure at some point in your journey you thought that would never be distasteful to you.
Yeah, I just never realized how passionately and how strongly I could feel for things. You know, you live kind of numb until you come to know a life-wrecking, life-saving king that makes you feel and makes you know. And I don't know, it was just radical. I think we serve a radical God who, if you cry out to him, if you come to his feet, he doesn't just give lukewarm help and a little bit of this or that. If you are truly open and submissive and yearning, desiring deeply for change, oh man, he comes like a raging waterfall.
That's good.
It's powerful and it's beautiful. And a verse that I really began to lean into that I'd heard my whole life, growing up in the church and in a Christian family, I mean, I'd heard, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. I heard that verse after truly coming to know him. And it became non-negotiable. It became so much more intense because God is big and powerful. And it was, love the Lord your God with all of your heart. That means guard your heart fiercely.
Yeah.
Love the Lord your God with all your soul. That means break these soul ties, surrender them to him. Love the Lord your God with all your mind. That means take your thoughts captive, all of them, every single
one. You're preaching now,
girl. Girl, I'm going to preach.
I'm going to get up here and preach. Well, that's what happens when God changes your life.
It
really does make you want to tell other people you really can be free.
Yes.
And here's how you can do it. Okay. We've got to close in a few minutes.
Sorry.
But I've got to ask you a question. No,
yes.
I love it. I love it. You're a talker like me. It's good news.
I'll ramble. I will.
Okay, listen. You've been married.
Yes.
How long?
I have been married for almost 8 months.
Okay.
He's smoking hot. Instagram at Mo Isom. Girls, God is good. He is good.
Ah, that's awesome.
He's good.
Okay. Here's what I want to know. Were you worried that someone would never, if you were honest with them about all of the struggle you've had since you were 7,
mm-hmm.
that they wouldn't view you as pure, they wouldn't view you as somebody who was wife material? I'm thinking about the person who they don't know if they should be honest, and mm-hmm. they are really genuinely worried that no one will ever love them.
Mm-hmm.
If they reveal this struggle. Because see, pornography is such a man's, we sometimes consider that to be such a man's issue.
Right.
That for a woman, it seems like particularly dirty and particularly unusual for
as
some
if
reason.
Women aren't sexual beings as well.
Exactly.
It's
but that's just the stigma that the culture has put on it. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of women that are a lot more quiet and reserved about talking about this issue because
mm-hmm.
they're worried that people are never going to look at them the same, particularly that they'll never be able to have a loving, authentic, open relationship mm-hmm. with a guy that will want to be their husband still.
Right. I was terrified. I was terrified, even in singleness, to eventually have to share with the man that, you know, hopefully I would marry, about my past and share those scars and share those choices I made many times. Totally terrified. And when I met Jeremiah, there was such an authentic presence of the Holy Spirit in him that it invites vulnerability.
Makes you feel safe.
It does.
Yeah.
And I opened up to him, not because he asked me to. At no point did he sit down and say, what's your number? Tell me your list. You know, let's go through the
pull out the black
the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
Exactly. But one day I remember sitting on my front steps and I was like, there's something I need to share with you. And I kind of word vomited all over him. And he sat there for a second. And this is actually the conclusion of the blog. If you read 50 Shades of Grace on my blog, he sat there for a second and I could tell that it was heavy on him. And, you know, he sighed and he looked at me and he said, has God forgiven you? Have you sought forgiveness? And I said, yes, many times. And he says, then what do I have to hold against you or hold over you? And I forgive you too.
That's a good man right
y'all,
there,
y'all, that's
girl.
When I was like,
that's
propose.
Right.
I'm ready. He's
beautiful.
A good man.
Yeah.
And I think that, yes, vulnerability is terrifying. But
it really is the key to walking down the path to wholeness.
It
I
is.
Think, and health in an issue like
an
this.
An authentic
yeah.
community, an authentic relationship,
that's good.
And real love. Not stimulating, get your kicks now, and then it's gone lust. But
yeah.
true, authentic, deep love
that's
good. Abiding.
That's so great. You
yeah.
are going to want to make sure that you go look up 50 Shades of Grace. If you have not already, you want to read this blog. But not only that, you just want to get to know Mo because her whole story, she just lives out loud. If you haven't been able to tell by the 30 minutes that we've been talking with each other, you will be able to know more and more about her if you read more of her blogs, more of her stories, more of her testimony that she shares. And her testimony really is one of hope. Listen, I want you to know this is just part one of a conversation we're going to continue to have with Mo, along with one of the most incredible young women that I've ever met. She works for Teen Vogue, lives right in the middle of New York City. And so she's kind of got a pulse on what's happening with our culture, particularly young women, and how maybe the salacious appetite of our culture really is affecting them and what she's seeing happening out there. So we're just going to add her right to this conversation and continue. Yep, we got a nice little warm spot for her right over there by Mo. And we're going to have a great conversation. But for now, would you just please help me to thank Mo for really just sharing with us today? That's awesome. You're so easy to talk to.
Thanks.
Hey there. Welcome. Welcome. This is The Chat. It's a place where we are chatting about the things that are important. And today we have a very important show. Listen, you have probably heard of a little book turned movie called 50 Shades of Grey. Well, the gray area is becoming even more gray. It seems like nobody really knows how to kind of get a handle on what's right, what's wrong, what's in between, and if any of this is really doing damage in the lives of people. And we're going to talk about that today because it's important. Millions upon millions of people, mostly women, have read this book, have gone to this movie, and we already did a show on the 50 Shades of Grey. We talked to two very incredible women who were able to help us kind of wade through some of the psychological waters as to what this is doing to our lives, to our marriages. But today we're going to talk a little bit more personally with a couple people that are going to be able to give us some personal insight about how their lives have been affected by things like pornography, promiscuity. You know, listen, this is not just a man's issue. It very much is a woman's issue as well. We're going to get the female perspective on it. You are going to want to stay tuned. This is going to be a good one. A chair. This has already been a great conversation that we've been having. This is part two of a conversation, okay? So you need to view part one if you have not already. We've been talking about an issue, something that really is an issue for women that we really don't talk about much, and that's pornography, promiscuity, our culture, how we're going to be able to be pure as women. And stand up against, you know, so many things that are happening in our culture, not the least of which is this phenomena which has kind of raced across the entire planet, 50 Shades of Grey. Well, we've named, or great, 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah, that's right. We've named this program 50 Shades of Grace, just to give you another alternative and to hear some stories of hope that will be helpful to you. And we want to add to that conversation today. We've been talking to a wonderful woman named Mo, but we also want to talk to a young lady named Sheena. I'm just kind of taken by her. And I think you're going to see why, because do you remember when you were a little girl and you grew up thinking, man, one day I want to live in New York City. One day I want to be, you know, I want to work in fashion maybe. I want to do some cool things with my life. Well, she's not just dreaming about it. She's actually doing it. And as a result of that, she really does have a pulse on what's happening in the lives of young women. So we want to talk to her today. Will you please welcome Sheena to the program? We can't wait to talk to you. Thank you for being here. I'm so glad you're here. Mo.
So glad to be here. Yes.
Should we talk about how impressed we are with her pants?
It's the pants, it's the blazer, it's the hair above all else.
Yeah, you're looking all teen Vogue. Is there a reason why you look teen Vogue?
I wanted to impress you.
Yeah, right.
I thought it was going to be Battle of the Curls.
And then it is Battle of the Curls.
You pulled yours back, so.
Oh, that's
I'm feeling confident now.
Well, you look so fashionable because you work for
Teen Vogue.
Tell us what you do there.
I am integrated marketing director at Teen Vogue, which is kind of a fancy way to say that we are the puzzle piece between the ad side and the editorial side. And it's a lot of creativity. It's really fast paced. We're building campaigns all the time, long hours, but really incredible work.
And you have a pulse on what's happening with young women because that's your audience. That's who you're kind of making sure the magazine reads well toward.
Yes.
Okay. So we've been talking with Mo in part one of this conversation that we've been having about her personal struggle, but also culturally the struggle women really are having with purity. Yeah. And so what trends, both of you, particularly you, Sheena, though, in the position that you have, what trends are you seeing that are really making it difficult for our young women to be pure?
So yeah, a big part of our job is knowing what's going on in pop culture at all times. And seeing that, you know, not just in the magazine and print, but seeing, you know, social conversations with social media. And there's really, an overwhelming pressure for girls to define themselves and define yourself without boundaries. So, you know, live life for today, get out there and, you know, see what's inside of you, discover that. And, really for young girls, the people who are seen to be, you know, the bold and the free are the ones who really push to the edge of the limits. And, you know, they're the ones who are really diving into things that are really risque, and that that's getting all the media attention. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the girls that and the people that women are looking up to now, that our young women are looking up to. And you know, it's something that it's really warring against kind of, you know, all the messages that we have. It's, they're seeing these women who are on the outer edges, you know, pushing the limits as the ones who are bold and free, versus us women as Christians who are the ones who actually have the truth. We're the ones who are bold and free.
Mm-hmm. And you, I mean, you're living a pretty exciting life. So you're living kind of bold and out loud and free. Okay. But what do you guys think is that dividing line, sort of that line that a woman, a young woman that's watching right now, she's trying to figure out, how do I live out loud and be that kind of woman that I so admire when I look in a magazine, except be able to do that in a way that's still honoring to my body and honoring to myself as a woman? What's that line that she should be looking for to let her know when she's sort of teetering over the edge?
Yeah. I'll go first. I think what's interesting, I love how you used the word free, because I think that is kind of the anthem of these young women. If they want to be expressive and free and, you know, all of these things, but in no definition of freedom that I know does your personal freedom come at the cost of bondage to others. And so I think these girls are thinking, I'm going to express myself and wear whatever I want and be as sexual as I want because I'm free. Yet it's causing their brothers to stumble. It's causing other girls to covet and envy. It's causing a lot of bondage in a lot of people around them. Mm-hmm. And I've just always found that the boldest leader, the most free individual, is the most faithful follower, follower of Christ. And I think there's amazing freedom in knowing that we were designed by a creator who's written us this tremendous love letter and telling us how to be at our best when we're nearest to him. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like, give that a run. Give it a shot, girls. Yeah. You know, try that type of freedom. Yeah. And see how that not only empowers you, but empowers the people around you too.
Okay. So tell me, does Teen Vogue, are you able to present a picture, an image of this bold, confident, fearless woman who is living out loud, and do that in a way that doesn't position her sexually? Do you think that your magazine does that well?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think, you know, there's definitely a fine line. Our readers are anywhere from, you know, teenagers in high school to mostly college age, and a lot are beyond. So from a perspective of like my actual work, I am in a safe space of, you know, not having to put together things that are over-sexualized or that are really drawing that line. I think, you know, regardless, when you look at the industry in general, the media industry, so much is permissible. Just in the work culture.
Yeah. And gray is getting grayer.
Gray is getting grayer as far as work culture in that perspective. And so I think as a Christian, as a believer, it's my position to be the light there, because, you know, for most that I can, from what I can see from my coworkers and colleagues, you know, there are not a lot of believers at all.
Is it hard to be in the middle of Manhattan working for a major magazine and be a believer?
You have
to swim upstream.
It would be harder if I were not filled up on the Lord and if I did not have such an intimate relationship with him myself. I think that's something that it's pertinent that you have, that you have to. You have to be filled up with him yourself. You have to have community around you and people who support you and people who understand. And when you've had a hard day, you know, when you do come up against something where it's rubbing against, you know, the area where you feel that Christ has had for you to walk within, the support of that community is absolutely necessary so that you could step out and do whatever you need to do and face whatever you need to face. So it's not circumstantial. It's really, you know, that intimate time you have with the Lord and the people who are strengthening you and keeping you, you know, in check.
Do you think, Mo, that there could have been an older woman in your life, if she would have said this, if she would have asked me this, if someone would have done this, I probably could have circumvented a whole lot of a lot of my journey. It could have been shortened and less impactful if somebody would have done.
Yeah, it's...
Or not. Maybe not.
Well, I had a mom who wholeheartedly, with everything in her, was trying to instill those strong values within me, who really did constantly share those strong messages and prayed for me without ceasing. I think that, you know, girls will take what their mother says with a grain of salt as comparative to if a friend or a peer were to say something. And I think possibly if there had been someone a bit nearer to my age who had let me know, you know, you have purpose. Actually, God has unbelievable plans for you, and you're so valuable. Mm-hmm. You're worth so much. It's one thing to hear that from adults when you're a kid because you think,
you're supposed to tell me that, yeah.
Keep it coming.
You're old, but, you're 40.
Yeah. But, I don't know, if I had had a peers when I was a teenager who had had the boldness to come up and shake some sense into me and say, hey, we're sisters in this, we've got a bold commissioning, let's go be about God's business and break the mirrors that are just mm-hmm. in front of us constantly. Let's focus on something else. I think that would have been amazing. I unfortunately didn't really have that type of bold community around me, hence now why I do what I do of trying to get in with younger girls and get them to rise up together mm-hmm. in community to say we are women and we are beautiful mm-hmm. and we are powerful and strong and mighty in the Lord. We don't have to be, you know, the greatest sexual tease to be a powerful female. Mm. I think it would have gone a long way.
And I was going to say, I think it's the vision that you have to have to know that God said that you're worthy, mm-hmm. that God said that you are my daughter and I love you and I have something amazing for you. There's a woman that I've made you to be, and he's calling us into being those people. He's calling us out of darkness and bondage and all these things that would keep us out of that destiny of, you know, a woman who is powerful in her sphere of influence and who's just operating in all the blessings and all the things that he's built to help you just spread his message and spread his love to people around you. And that for me is something that, you know, it's never been about staying away from sin or staying away from, you know, needed to shield myself from certain things. It's always about chasing after what God yeah. has set before us.
Do you think that community, like what Mo was saying, do you think that community is important enough that it would steer a young girl away from having to go out to define herself? Do you think that community is enough definition for her that she doesn't then need to seek it elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so much power in being able to look over to your peers and say, you know, we share this in common, or she's like me and she's walking in freedom. She's like me and she's, you know, not needing to run to these things. She's whole. Being able to look over and see someone who's like you, and being able to relate to that is such a powerful thing. For me in particular, that's what made celibacy real to me, because I wasn't saved until I was almost 23.
And by what are you now, like 24 and a half?
I am
She's
so much
30.
Younger than Ford.
She is almost 30.
I'm 29 now, so I've been saved for just over 6 years. And that was one of the first things that changed, is that just walking in purity and walking in celibacy. And it's crazy because, you know, I turned to my roommates and my friends who were there, and I was like, I feel so powerful. Like, I actually, you feel powerful. You feel... There's this amazing thing that happens when you step into who God has called you to be. And, you know, without hearing that from people, without hearing someone next to your sister say, oh my goodness, there's so much power and amazing, you know, life in this and walking in this way. That's what calls you to freedom. That's what gives you the boldness to step out. And, you know, in community, we can't be afraid to share those things, or to share what we're walking through, or share what we've broken free from.
That's good.
Because that, you know, gives permission to others that they can break free as well. And yeah. that, hey, this sounds crazy, or this seems radical. It seemed so radical to me to, like, what, I'm not going to have sex again until I'm married. That was such a radical thought until I saw other people walking like that. And it's like, well, if she can do it, I can do that
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know? Freedom looks good on you, girl. It looks good on you too, Mo. I think it looks good on all of us, as a matter of fact. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes to talk more about this important topic and about how we can all be free.
is going to be an incredible experience where we all get to see what it's like to experience God's unfailing love. We are incredibly loved, incredibly valuable, and incredibly capable of blowing it. That's why we are in the book of Hosea. I want you to experience it. I want you to be able to enjoy it. I want you to be able to taste and see that the Lord is good. If you're lost, the message of Hosea is that God will find you. If you're ashamed, He'll cover you. If you've wandered off, He'll come get you. If you have given up on Him, He is not going to give up on you. If you have found yourself in chains and in slavery and you don't know how you got there, He will buy you back and give you freedom. That's the incredible scandal of God's love. He would do whatever it takes to restore us. That kind of unfailing love will change everything.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We are having a great conversation. A strong conversation. If you've got a teenager, a young woman in your life, you're going to want to pull her close, make her sit down, watch just a little bit. We have some strong, incredible, free women that are on our program today that are helping us to just kind of get some clarity on the issue of promiscuity, pornography, just sex in our culture, and how we can really just know that our power as women is not found in our sexuality, but it is found in Christ. So these two incredible women have been helping us with that. And I want to ask you a little bit about that. 50 Shades of Grace is the name of the program. Because of 50 Shades of Gray, did you find in your role at Teen Vogue, did you find any noticeable sort of measurable effects that you guys were able to detect at all in the lives of young women as a result of this phenomena of a book and movie that just sort of ran rampant across the culture? Was there anything that you guys detected in what your readers wanted and what they were asking for and what intrigued them?
I think as far as Teen Vogue, you know, we definitely content-wise, we steer clear of things that can, you know, walk that fine line. So I think as far as the content of the magazine, that's something that we have not delved into, but as far as like a work culture,
yeah,
I could definitely say that it's, you know, having to kind of have a pulse, a finger to the pulse of pop culture, you know, that is something that everyone's talking about, everyone's going to see. It's
so
very much
not
supported.
Address it? How do you not address it in a magazine like Teen Vogue when it's what everybody's talking about?
I think, you know, to a certain level, they respect the line of, you know, the age gap that we have with readers and knowing that certain things we just are not going to address.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as far as kind of the heavier pull is to, are you joining in those conversations when they're being had at work? You know, are you allowing kind of the curiosity to pull at you and, you know, are you going to go see it because it's what everyone's talking about? Are you going to go see it to be a part of this culture in this moment and this, you know, conversation on social media. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, it's important that, you know, we as Christian and as women, we put a stake in the ground and say that, like, I'm not crossing this line. This is something that I'm not going to be a part of. And I think it's important to have that vision for, you know, what you know that God's calling you to, what life he's calling you to lead and what light, you know, he's calling you to be. And decide ahead of time what things that you're going to take part in and what things you're not. And if this is something that, you know, once you pre-decide it's something I'm not going to do, it's something I'm not going to take part in, there's such power in that. And you don't have to continue to make that decision as, you know, the book is out and now the movie's out and now there's a conversation about it. And now, you know, once you kind of draw
that
line.
That path, yeah. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the stake in the ground that you talked about, though, Sheena, because you told us in the earlier segment that you did put a stake in the ground in your own life. Mm-hmm. What did it look like for you to come from living a certain way, indulging in certain things, enjoying your life in the way you chose to then, and then becoming a Christian and choosing that you were going to not do away with your sexuality forever, because sexuality is an important part of every woman's life, but that you were going to kind of corral that part of your life? It's not like it's just an easy thing
to do, especially living in the environment that you're living in. So what did that practically look like for you? What parameters did you have to put in place to begin to walk in this purity that you wanted so much for your life?
So I was actually in a long-term relationship for 3 years at the time when I got saved. And it's crazy because that sex was the thing that I put up as the wall in between, you know, me and God. And I've been going to church, and I've been getting closer, and I felt like maybe a couple weeks before that day when I made that decision, I heard and understood the gospel for the first time in my entire life, and I understood all the freedom that he gave us, and that's when it started changing my heart, that how could I do these things? How could I just walk away from now knowing all the freedom that he's giving us? And one day I broke down, and the words came flying out of my mouth, I have to stop having sex. And that was actually my salvation moment. In that moment, that was the moment I stopped running. That was the moment I stopped fearing that I had to protect my relationship. I had to protect this guy that I thought was going to be my husband. It's obviously not. Wasn't.
Did you lose him over this issue? Or were there a number of things?
There were a number of things. The very next day I went to him and I said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry this affects you. I'm so sorry that I'm changing my part of the bargain in this deal. I'm so sorry that I'm the one changing, but I can't do this anymore. And
bravo, sis.
And it,
that's awesome.
And I don't know what's going to happen to our relationship. I don't know if you're still my husband.
What was his response?
His response was that he was supportive. And
for like 24 hours.
Yeah, and I had to be really clear with here's what we're going to do, here's what we're not going to do. And quickly it became, okay, here's what everything we're not going to do, because it's a slippery slope, and a gray area is you can't. So I made it very black and white. And God is faithful, because regardless, God was like, okay, well, he's not your husband. So he just went to work and moved everything out, and that relationship broke up quickly. And it's for the better. It's amazing, because he's not the person, you know, I'm supposed to be
with. And then after that relationship, did it become easier for you then, or did you still have to put parameters in place to make sure that you stayed?
It became easier because the immediate threat is gone. And now it's, as I said, it's deciding ahead of time. I am not going to go past these levels. This is where I draw the line. I will not go down that path with someone. And then that way, like, you know, having a gray area, having an area where you're reasoning now, that's such a dangerous territory.
Yeah.
Keep it black and white. This is what I will do. This is what I will not do. This is how I will honor God. And when it gets to a certain point, you shut it down.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen.
And I think that everybody needs to be aware of the courage that it takes to make that decision, especially when you're, like you were, in a relationship where things had already been experienced, and you're having to bravely go to a person and say, hey, I've made this decision, and this is what we're going to do. This is what we're not going to do. It takes courage, and it doesn't always pan out positively. Like, everybody's not going to applaud you and be okay, and the relationship's going to work out. It could be that you're going to lose this person that you care about very, very much, because they're not on this journey with you. Yeah. But that is a choice that you made, and it doesn't look like you're suffering from that choice at all, my friend.
I cannot tell you how much, you know, after the fact, I felt like I got all of me back. I felt like no man is ever going to have power over me. No man is ever going to have a piece of me. I will never have to live with this. There was this terrible struggle going on while I was trying to do that and trying to run away from God at the same time. It was too much. Mm-hmm. And knowing just the peace, you know, in my soul afterwards, after that, that no longer having that tension between, you know, fighting between what I wanted my life to be and what I know God was calling me to. And it's like, okay, God's going to win in this. God is going to win.
So, okay, so Mo, I have a question for you as a married woman now.
Yes.
I want to know, because I'm hearing little sweet Sheena over here talking about how she's saying, you know, I'm not going to let a guy have kind of power over me like that. I want to know, as a married woman now, how you balance this important perspective that you're your own woman and that you are coming into your own freedom, all that stuff. That's all great. How do you balance that with the reality that, as a married woman
in some sense, you are voluntarily now having to shift that mindset just a little bit, so that you are voluntarily in a relationship where he is the leader.
Mm-hmm.
I am submitting myself to his leadership, not to be a doormat to be walked over, but because I know that this is the kind of the order that the Lord. How do you shift your mindset? Because it doesn't just happen when you say I do. You don't say I do,
right,
and all of a sudden just want to be submissive. You have to kind of set yourself up for that. So how do you be a powerful, strong, single woman, live the adventure with God, enjoy being alone, all that great stuff,
mm-hmm,
but not walk down that path so much that when the time comes for you to join your life with another,
mm-hmm,
you're not willing to voluntarily do that, easily do that?
I love that question. I love it. Because I very much, just like Sheena, was, you know, boldly walking in this independence with the Lord and guarding my heart, guarding my body. And it's interesting because I thought, well, sure, when we say I do, a switch will flip and I will, you know, suddenly fully be able to give of myself. But the tears on my honeymoon sort of proved that theory wrong, because I realized all this bondage that existed that I didn't even know. I was, you know, trying to be performance-based, you know, and I had never let myself with other guys go all the way. So therefore, I had the bit of this barrier up in my own heart and body with my own husband to ever fully surrender every piece of me. And it just... We were a hot mess on that cruise. It was interesting. And he is the most gracious man and drew me in.
Was the food good, though?
The food was so good, but that made it like a hotter mess, you know, because some of the food, it's a long story. But, you know, he was a man who drew me in. And for the very first time, I understood that sex was like this holy threesome between the husband and the wife and Jesus. And Jesus is a very real part of this equation, this marriage, not just in the vows of, you know, the day to day, you're the man, I'm the woman, this is what you do, this is what I do, but in all of it, including the sexual relationship, including everything, we became one flesh. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is that, you know, sex is truly an act of worship with that one flesh, which is why it's so out of whack when you're out of marriage, because it's not the right type of worship. It's like keys are off or something. But when you are truly like in worship in marriage, following becomes a gift.
Mm-hmm.
To have a strong leader you trust, to be able to surrender yourself to him, and sometimes sex to be amazing and intimate and romantic, and sometimes you're laughing the whole way through, and sometimes you just really don't want to, but you know your husband does need that, and you surrender. And it ends up, I mean, it's just this beautiful dance you learn, that's awkward at times, and it's, you know, funny at times, and it's amazing at times, but it's this true act of leadership and submission that that's really beautiful. And when it's with a husband who you know honors you and cherishes you and sees you as a gift and a prize and treats you right and well,
mm-hmm,
following becomes a treasure comparable to following the Lord.
Yeah.
You follow a good man, a good husband who's seeking the Lord as well. And It knocked my independence out pretty quickly when I got that gist. I liked it.
Sheena, what do you think about that?
Are you ready to cry on your hug?
Well, I'm just thinking.
It's beautiful.
You're in a very interesting place in your life.
Yeah.
You're a young woman, but you're very successful. You're living this sort of progressive, independent, standing for righteousness, God, all this stuff. But I'm also very successful on my job. You're like this. You know, you're one of the kind of statistical images of women who.
I don't want to be a statistical image.
Not a negative statistic, but statistical in the sense that you're one of these very successful, independent, doing it on her own kind of women. And I think in general for women that are single and are doing it on their own, it can sometimes be hard to sort of meld that into a relationship.
Yeah.
I haven't even asked you if marriage is something that you desire, but it is. So do you think that it's going to be hard for you to bring all of this success and independence and all that good stuff underneath the covering of a husband?
No, because... and first of all, I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
It's absolutely beautiful.
You described it beautifully.
Yeah. I absolutely hope that marriage is in my future. I hope that the Lord has a man for me. I pray for it all the time.
You know, we got cameras. I can put a call out right now.
Who's watching?
Fluff it up, honey. Fluff it up. 555-1212.
But I, you know, I think independence is it's a very interesting concept when you're a believer, because I am absolutely submissive to the Lord. I am absolutely
so you want
dependent.
What he wants.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I'm absolutely not walking alone. I'm not just out there rigid and like power through it. I've lived with my two best friends. I've got a community of women that we've been building over the years, and God has just blessed us with.
You go to a great church. Liberty Church in New York is awesome.
Liberty is amazing. Yeah. And, you know, there are checks and balances there. There are people that I've allowed to speak into my life. There are people whose lives that, you know, I speak into, and we lock arm in arm and we do life together in all things. And I think there's absolutely going to be a shift when that's, you know, when I'm one with a man.
Yeah.
Hopefully one day, an awesome man.
555.
You know.
1212.
But I think, you know, it is planning and preparation and all things that, you know, I love that I live with two girls who they, you know, we see each other through thick and thin and through awful times and when we're our worst and our best and all of that. And and so, you know, I absolutely cannot wait until one day, you know, for it to be marriage. But it's amazing to understand and to walk in freedom and wholeness as an individual and know that even not something that's ever, that God ever has in the cards for me, that I'm not waiting to be whole and to be one, or waiting for someone to validate me or to give me power in a certain, thank you.
That's good. That
area.
Is awesome. That is awesome. This has been great. It has been great. And listen, freedom really does look good on these girls. It looks good on me. It can look good on you too, no matter what you're struggling with, whether it's this issue we've been talking about or it's something else that's just kind of got you shackled and feeling a little bit like you're not able to live fully and freely and without fear of consequences and regrets. Listen, you don't have to stand for that in your life. Not one more day. You can be the woman that God has called you to be. And you can start today. You don't even need to wait till tomorrow. Freedom can be yours today. And so I'm going to be praying to that end. I hope that you have enjoyed our program today, because we sure have enjoyed having this conversation. Please join us again next time.